Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 241 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Oh, my God, man. Ishmael Butler. You may recognize that name, and you may recognize some of the work he's done in the past, namely a band called, or a hip-hop group called Diggable Planets. Diggable Planets, man. They won a Grammy. Yeah. Responsible for one of my favorite albums of all time called Blowout Comb. Yeah, those guys, man. Ishmael Butler of Shabazz Palaces joining us here in the backyard. He's going to be here shortly. We had a absolutely amazing conversation. This will most definitely go down in history as one of my favorites that I've probably had in here, because Ishmael tells some stories that are just fantastic. And, you know, I don't think I've heard him tell these stories in any of the other interviews that he's done. So real treat, man. Real absolute treat. And he's a fantastic human being, very, very talented, and just a true artist, man, in every sense of the word. Shabazz Palaces, going on tour, starting here pretty quick. Friday, April 3rd, they're going to be at the Hollywood Palladium with TV on the Radio down there in Los Angeles, California. So our listeners down there, please get your tickets now. Sunday, April 5th, they'll be in at Chapel in San Francisco. Saturday, April 11th, La Belle Electrique in Grenoble, France. So they go over to Europe April 11th. And do a whole European tour for about the next month. So get on it, will ya? Yeah, do that, man. Okay, we've got, man, this episode is so fantastic. So fantastic. I think you guys are really, really going to enjoy this. I had a wonderful time talking with Ish, and it was a real honor. But before we get into that, we are, let's see. Oh, wait, you know what? I gotta say, I almost forgot. We had Crackle Fest on Friday, last Friday, and it absolutely went so good. It went so good. I have a great time every year, hosting that event, as part of, Emerald City Comic Con down at the Hard Rock Cafe in Seattle. And, we'd been plugging it for a little while, for about a month there here on this show. And it just went fantastic. There were about, I don't know, God, like 350, maybe 400 people there showed up. It was just a full house in a great venue. It was just so much fun. The crowd was great. So if you were there and you're checking out the show for the first time, thank you so much for coming to Crackle Fest. And if I met you or gave you a free CD or something like that as part of the trivia that we did, congratulations. Congratulations for the CD, not for meeting me. That didn't come out right. But man, what a great time. What a great time. Burlesque dancing, a bunch of great music, met a bunch of great people, and even met a couple listeners there. So that was a lot of fun. So nice to see you guys out there. We do that every year. So, bank on that happening again next time. Next time Emerald City Comic Con rolls around. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. lot of fun. Hey, one thing coming up, keep your ears peeled. We don't have a date yet, but we are now in the works of planning the next Air Raid Live event. We're going to do another live show, most likely at Naked City Brewery, and I just wanted to put that out there and get the juices flowing, right? And by saying this on the air, now it's going to make me actually go through with it, right? So now I actually have to do this. Like, if I didn't tell you guys that this was in the works, then it probably would just go away and never happen. But now that I'm saying it, now it has to happen, right? Now you get, it has to happen. One more thing. Man, I got a whole bunch of stuff to get to here. Hey, we got an email from a listener, and I'm sorry I erased it, so I can't remember your name. But thank you so much for sending it. And he had a suggestion that we should reach out and get other people to provide their children saying the inspirational quote at the end of the show. So if you want to do that, record your kid, your small child, saying an inspirational quote. Email it to aaron@air-raid.net. Okay, that's it. Okay, this song is called Motion Sickness off of the current Shabazz Palace album, Les Majestés. On Sub Pop Records. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Stay with us. The mistakes you made, it seasons grown, castles raided, fortunes blown, sides was faded, spouses gone, much too late. Ten toes down, cause to the gangster rules you catered. Saw shit through a nigga that you knew was laid out. Money's no object. You spending cash out of all four pockets. Your girl rocking lockets. Your goons pop the rockets. Applied it big for a lake. You are not it. A hood pedigree of syndicates and felonies. A G structure more lustrous than the busters. He in the fast life ultimate. Grind great groove. Shake and bake. Scratch and scrape. Don't star. No potential for sales. Fiends lined up like the crows on the fence at Ezell's. It ain't hard to tell. Boy, you all a glow. Everybody knowing now you in the show. Retainers paid out, trying to map the play out. The streets is undefeated, really, now there ain't no way out. The world is closing up, go re-up, fix your cut. Feel your eyes, sky your chains, and maybe you can style a truck. Meanwhile, plots and capers, lots of flavor, knots of paper. Watching neighbors, wondering who's really faking. We in the breezeway. To be us, it takes leaps of faith. The main question, you don't ever ask it. History say, it's the casket or the basket. You like past that, let's get blasted and mask up. Who could poly like a diplomat? The last place you can think of where they get you at. 80 miles from your sink where they sit you at. Life's a bitch, treat her good or she'll get you back.
Speaking of Eric Blood,
mm-hmm.
One of my favorite Seattle musicians, by the way. How did you guys meet? How did that relationship start? Because he's basically produced all of the Shabazz Palace's records, right?
Yeah, I don't. I only drink Bullet when I'm with him. I met him.
Hence why you're drinking it right now.
Yeah, I met him. I just found out tonight at a Spiritualized concert at a place, an esteemed venue in Seattle called the Showbox.
So that's and you didn't remember meeting him?
I didn't, but was I he, don't remember was, stuff like that.
Was he kind of pissed off that you didn't remember?
I saw it
he's
in his eyes, but he didn't
kind
really.
Of that type of guy.
Yeah, he was bitter, but he just kind of glossed over it.
And it's super awkward because he's sitting right behind us right now.
No, yeah.
Ishmael Butler joining me in the backyard. Thank you, sir, for making the trek.
Ah, yeah. The track was a little bit of a trick.
Yeah.
I really like the two fire like ovens or some shit in the back. What is that?
Never used them. Just outdoor barbecue.
They look good, man.
Yeah, they look good. They really look good. You into barbecue?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you good at it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then you can come up here and
They're functional?
Giant. Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. You just got to build like a huge fire in there.
I understand.
And it's probably got to be burning for quite some time to get
But that
hot.
The guy that put that in, and if he knew you weren't utilizing that, he would be upset, bro.
Oh, he's pissed. Well, you see, like this right here, right behind you?
Yeah.
That is a indoor chicken rotisserie.
Come. Yeah. You don't use that either?
Oh, man. Think of how bad that mic screen would smell if I was using an indoor chicken rotisserie in here.
Ah, man, it's a matter of perspective, bro. If you came here and had a nice, like, well-done rotisserie chicken right now, think about that, man. But you know what? Okay,
that
man.
Would be really impressive if all of my guests got to go home with a nice...
Cats would be lined up all the way down the street, man.
Kenny Rogers rotisserie chicken.
Wow.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. That'd be good.
Yeah.
So... Ish, you're, can I call you Ish,
mm-hmm.
by the way? Is that
you
okay?
You just did, man, all right. But yeah, you can do it again.
Okay, good, good, good. You grew up here in Seattle, right?
It's true.
Born and raised?
It's true.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Whereabouts? Where was the neighborhood that you grew up in?
30th and Cherry. Cherry, we call Cherry because we say Cherry,
yeah.
But I live right off of Columbian Way. But it's a block away from Cherry. So 30th and Cherry,
yeah.
Garfield High School, Miller Community Center, CAYA, Meany yeah. Middle School, all that good stuff, man.
Yeah. What was life like for a little Ishmael Butler?
It was, very exhilarating and colorful, like the personalities that were in my family and in my neighborhood. It was free too, because from a young age we would explore a lot, like going from the Arboretum all the way to like places by the lake and to the South End, all through the CD. And you know, Seattle's very natural too, so you know, it was like going
through
the
woods.
You
could go hang out in the woods.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in a place like that.
Yeah.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I'm worried that my child will not be able to do that for some reason.
Well, be more worried that she might not want to. You know, if you can get her to want to do stuff like that, she'll be able to find places to do it. But it's just not something that's going to be introduced in that way. Like, it doesn't matter much to people anymore.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's yeah. true. Video games are more important.
It's true.
For me, anyway.
We're playing right now, by the way.
We got the sound all the way down. Yeah, it's great. It's great. So growing up as a youngin here in Seattle, what were your musical influences? Like, what were you listening to as a kid?
Pop radio.
Yeah?
Yeah, pop radio. And my mom's choices were... Motown. My dad's choices, which he was in Philadelphia and New York, but I would see him in the summertime. His choices mm-hmm. were bebop and then like current kind of jazz movement stuff, but always more avant-garde, like Albert Ayler, Cedar Walton type stuff, like
uh-huh.
Last Poets, Pharoah Saunders, that kind of stuff. And my mom was like soul, top 40, and then like she loved Motown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you're getting it like in the home all the time.
Yeah, is yeah, it always
constantly
music
spinning.
On. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. That's great, man.
Yeah.
I wish I grew up like that.
How'd you grow up?
I had, you know, it was a lot of radio, you know, because I grew up over on the Kitsap Peninsula,
uh-huh.
so we had to drive everywhere, right? Like just go to the grocery store. So it was like a lot of radio, a lot of like, you remember KBSG?
No.
The oldies station? It was like all oldies.
Oldies like
pop.
What? 70s?
No, 60s.
60s.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So it's all, you know, Beatles and the Turtles and
that's good.
Whoever the first band was that did House of the Rising Sun.
Wow.
You know. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was never like in the home at all times.
No.
You know? Yeah. Mm. And I always kinda envied the kids that had music going on all the time.
That's enviable.
Yeah. Do you think that plays a part in like becoming a musician later on in life?
No. I mean, in a sense that like some people need that exposure to understand their own predispositions.
Sure.
But I think rarely do they not like, because that stuff you heard was, you know, was good enough to get you there, right?
Sure.
So I think it doesn't hurt. You know, it doesn't hurt, because the more exposure that you get to different stuff, the more chances that you'll find something that relates to you and then starts to sort of nudge that inclination that you have.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah. I like that. I like that. So do you think that, like, listening and growing up surrounded by music, playing Motown and jazz and stuff like that, did that influence you as a kid, make you want to, like, play?
Well, my pop, man, you know, he is, like, you know, I say was just because it was a perspective I had as a kid that changed when you get a little bit mature, but not really. But my dad was like, I just wanted to do what he thought was interesting, you know, and he loves the sax. So
did he play?
No.
No?
But I did, you know. He got me an alto, and I ended up playing throughout middle school.
You must have been in that Garfield program.
I didn't. No, I was out by then.
Oh, okay.
But I was in Wade Irvin's program at Meany Middle School, who was just as dynamic and creative of a musician as Mr. Acox is, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's what it was for me.
So started out with saxophone.
Yeah, alto.
You still play?
No.
No?
No.
When did you give that up?
I stopped it as my freshman year in high school, and then I picked it back up later on in life for a while, but I was playing tenor for maybe like 2 years, and then I dropped it again.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it was like after middle school, music wasn't at the forefront?
No, I played basketball. Basketball was everything in my life at that time. Yeah.
So it was basketball star.
Yeah. Well, not a star, but I played. You know, I contributed.
No, that was the dream, right?
Not really. I mean, yeah. But not, I didn't forecast. Like, I didn't think I'm about to go to the NBA. I wanted to play in high school, and then I wanted to play at the university college level, and that's as far as I got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the goal was to be a college basketball player.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah.
Did you succeed in that?
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to University of Massachusetts, and my freshman year, I was on the team. I didn't play. So I ended up redshirting and waiting until the next year. And then next year, we got Coach John Calipari, who's now coach of Kentucky right now. So, yeah, I played.
That's good. Did you go on like scholarship or something?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So you must have been pretty good.
Well, yeah, here at Garfield, we won 2 state championships my junior and senior year.
Uh-huh.
Coach Al Hairston and, you know, cats on my squad, Rodney Jackson, Jason Jones. Like, these were some of the baddest cats in the country, really, you know. So we did well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember, like, hearing about Garfield High School when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And they were always just killing it.
Yeah.
Like, they had, like, the best basketball team
in
Washington, at least.
Definitely. Yeah. From my junior and senior year, for sure.
Yeah.
But every year, they won this year. You know, yeah.
It just keeps on going.
Yeah.
So you go away to college to Massachusetts. Was that when the first time you moved away from Seattle?
Well, not really, but the first time I was on my own, my father was always back east.
Uh-huh.
And I would spend a lot of time with him. You know, if it wasn't the school year with him, then it was the summer. So I had left Seattle quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd been around the country before.
Yeah, I was enamored with the East Coast. I love Philly and New York and D.C. And, you know, that culture influenced me a lot as a kid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what were the influences? What do you mean by it influenced you a lot?
Well, a culture is a vast, vast, vast thing. But I mean, for me, the dress, the style, the talking, the attitude. I was always playing basketball, so I've spent a lot of time on city courts and just like, these were beautiful, beautiful, beautiful places of just like vibrant sound and emotion and personalities, you know, like, and it was different. Like things weren't as homogenized now, like regions, even Philly cats were easily differentiate them from a Delaware or a New York guy just by the way they got their hair cut or the type of shoes they wore. Like, so it was cool to see all these different ways that people express themselves, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Was it scary as a kid going to play on a different city court?
Very.
Yeah?
Yeah, very. But I realize now my pop, you know, I wouldn't say it was scary, but it was anxious, you know?
Right.
And, I mean, my father understood that it would be that way, so he put me in those positions. I know he probably was worried about me, but he understood that I needed to figure out how to navigate these situations, you know?
Sure.
So, but at the end of it, it was always a cornucopia, really, of experience and pleasure, you know, that he put me in these positions to discover some of the things that really made me who I am.
Yeah.
You know, so it was cool.
That's a good life lesson.
It very, very much is.
Yeah, yeah. Putting you in kind of, you know, could be a dangerous situation.
I think that he never put me in a situation. Like, I might have, you could have gotten a fight, but other than that, no, not really.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't like that.
Yeah. I just had in my mind, like, my daughter's learning how to swim. And, like, if I wanted to, like, do a good life lesson, I could take her to, like, a shark tank or something.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
get her over her fear of water.
I think that's...
I was trying to make a joke-ish. You can laugh, it's fine.
Well, that happened to me, the Shark Tank thing.
What?
Nah, I'm playing. That's how we learned to swim at YMCA on 23rd.
That's how they make you go faster.
Yeah. Olympics.
So when did music come into the fold, man? Like, besides saxophone, when did hip-hop and rap enter your brain space?
High school? Yeah.
Here in Seattle?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, who were you listening to?
Well, I was there for the very first, like, you know, songs like Spoonie G's. Like, I would, and my exposure to the East Coast had me up on a lot of shit, too. So I heard all of the first shit. But I mean, for me, it was Sugar Hill Gang. Yeah, but like Rakim, though, like he had a single. One side was Paid and one side was Eric B as President, and one side was Check Out My Melody. And yeah, that was it. That was everything.
So were you the kid at school that was like bringing back the East Coast stuff?
I was.
Back to all your friends?
I was. Me and this guy named Wayne, who was really flyer than I could ever aspire to be. He was from Philly, but he was a smooth cat. And he was already kind of doing like mixtapes and bringing stuff back from the East Coast. He would tape like the Saturday and Friday night radio hip hop shows and bring them back and stuff. He was a cool cat.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So was that kind of the impetus to you getting into hip hop and rap? Like, were you starting to try it?
Yeah, I was rapping in high school. We had like three or four groups freestyling in the hallways, performing at the, you know, school festivals and
the talent shows and stuff like that.
Yeah,
yeah. What was it? What was it like getting on stage for the first time? Is it a scary experience?
Yeah, but like, unless the death is involved, I'm not really scared.
No?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And even sometimes when it is, I mean, it's just like, you just get anxious, you know? You just get anxious.
Ishmael but you Butler pursue that anxious. Constantly staring death in the face.
I'm doing it right now, man.
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I'm losing weight. Just a skeletal creature sitting over here. So what was it like? I mean, what you laughed. What Are you just remembering back? Like, is it kind of an embarrassing memory?
Nah, I'm not embarrassed by it, but no? it's actually, it's absurd. Like, so at that time, the hottest cats was like LL, Run DMC, that cat,
sure,
those type of dudes. So we had this group, and this dude named Twan, he was beatboxing, and it was three MCs. But this is my first time on stage.
Yeah?
I had this Air Jordan sweatshirt.
Of course you did.
I cut the sleeves off, and then I cut under the sleeves and taped it. And there was some line I delivered, and when I delivered the line, I had my friend rip the shirt off.
You did not. Oh my God.
I had my bro rip the shirt off of me, man.
I'm going to have to cut off. Oh my God.
That happened, man.
Oh shit. Was it choreographed really well?
It really was. It was like, I forget the line, but it was like some punctuated shit. Like,
yeah,
I told the beatbox, like, drop out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is about to go.
Oh, that's the most impressive thing ever. Did the crowd go in? Did the crowd go wild?
They went nuts, man. They went nuts. So after the show, I went backstage, so and this older guy named Victor.
Yeah,
I didn't really know him, but he was on a football team, so he was popular. So he ran up to me. He was like, but he said that somebody had Def Jam on the phone. But he was basically saying to me that, you know, we did good. And like, and I thought, Def Jam was, I couldn't imagine, like, what phone? You know what I'm saying? Like, where did they call? But I'm sure they did, like, though.
That was it, our first performance, and we're already getting Def Jam calling us? Oh, my God.
As soon as we got off stage, Def Jam. This was pre-cell phone, pre-phone booth,
right,
man. Come on.
Yeah.
So,
but that was it, man. Like, you were hooked after that point. You're like, I want to rip my.
I'm still waiting for Def Jam to call me, man. God. I'm still waiting for Def Jam to call me, man. This is what it's all been about, y'all.
Oh, that is so awesome. Oh, my God. That makes me so happy that you just told that story.
Yeah, I haven't told that one in a minute. That's crazy.
So that was it, though. That was when... I just got the greatest mental image in my mind. I want that to be made into a movie. Lynn Shelton, if you're listening right now.
Lynn, get on this get one, man. I work with you.
Oh, my God.
I need screenwriters, though.
I've never written a screenplay, but
although,
I will do that.
Although I've never done anything like that, I need it.
I will do it. So, after that performance, though, how are you? I mean, obviously, you're on cloud nine, right?
Yeah.
And so you just want to do it again and again.
Yeah, I mean,
was it being up on stage? Was like that a big part of it? Just being up in front of people and making a show.
Nah, you know the stage show. It's kind of ill because I don't remember anything about being on stage ever. Like even lately,
you just go into a blackout zone.
Nah, it's not black. It's dark though, but in a colorful way. You know, it's like you can't say you're lost, but you're in a you're in a void, you know. It's not even something intangible. It's very, because you're dealing with all your stuff you're working with and you're touching things, but you're just like conversing in another realm, you know, with humanity, with yourself, and then all the vibrations that's coming from all these tones and rhythms and stuff. It's just, I don't remember. Like, I'm thinking about totally devoted in thought to something else while that's happening.
Right, right. So when you're, and this might be kind of the same question I just asked, but when you're up there
mm-hmm.
and you are doing that stuff, is, I mean, a lot of it's got to just be muscle memory, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So and muscle create, like your muscles, brain, like remembering and then like modifying that memory to go do something else. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
So you're just being carried a lot of the time on I don't know what.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Right? When you're playing with people that you're really like, you're close to and you're getting into that rhythm, man, and like things are sounding great. And you do. You get into a zone where it's just like you can't. Nothing even sounds wrong.
Yeah,
you could play a sour note and it wouldn't sound bad. Like yeah. It would still go right.
Yeah, because it's
That's
physical.
A great feeling.
It's physical and chemical. Like you can mix things together at that point. That you know, it's only what it becomes. It's not what it should be. You know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's do this. Let's go to our second musical break. We'll wipe the tears from laughter from our eyes. This is called Solemn Swears off of Les Majestés by Shabazz Palaces. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears when we return this week with special guest Ish Butler. All right. Solemn Swears. We'll be right back.
So there was this one time McCoyo had made some stuff for us, like made us this gear for the Black Up album release. You know.
The mask?
No, the Black Up album release, man, that we had on the black felt.
Yes. Too.
So it was dope. He had us with some dope shit, but he had made these cuff link. It was like imagine a shirt. Right, then you get to the cuff, but the shirt part was gone. It was just the cuff. It was smooth, but Dye was supposed to wear it with a jacket, and it would come from under the jacket. But he decided to wear it with the vest for a minute. He said he was drumming, and he looked, and and from here, all he saw was Chippendale. He said, "I look like." He said he was looking at his hand and just saw, "Oh shit."
Is there a video of that?
Like he had breakaway pants on.
I think there might be.
There's got to be.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Oh, there's got to be video of that.
Yeah, man.
Was that just for a show or was that
was
for like a release?
It was for a show.
Yeah.
It was for a major show. Yeah. Anyway.
We're back, and I got all that on tape. Oh my God! So you move from Seattle. You start going to college.
No, well, yes, yeah. I did. Yes, I did
on a basketball scholarship.
Yes, which I didn't have when I went there.
Oh, but you didn't?
No, but I had by the time the season started.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay. So yeah. You tried out for the team?
Yes.
Yeah.
Man.
That's nice.
They knew I was coming. They knew I was a 2-time state champ, like, but they didn't recruit me, you know?
Okay.
I sort of picked them. I wanted to go east. My dad had a friend out there that was in the history department because mm-hmm. my dad's a history professor. So, you know, certain things were in my favor. And so I decided to go there and try out.
Yeah.
And it worked out good.
Right on, right on.
Thanks what to it, Al Hairston and the Garfield Bulldog program, I was prepared for Division I competition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they sat you on the bench.
Well, I got injured. I
oh,
got
you did?
Injured. Yeah, I got injured, okay. And I wasn't going to be able to come back. If I hadn't been injured, I would have been a reserve.
Mm-hmm.
But I probably would have played a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
When I came back and Coach Cal started coaching, I played all the time in every game. So I was decent. I was getting better. But we had cats on that squad. That Coach Cal's recruiting class was amazing. The guy that led the league in scoring as a freshman was Coach Cal's recruit. This guy, Jim McCoy, he was incredible, man.
Yeah.
Coach Cal is pretty great guy. It was cool to know him and get to work with him for a little bit.
He right on, man. Yeah. That's great. So what were you studying in school? What was the focus?
ostensibly civil engineering, but
oh, really?
Practically all types of social and anatomical things. Nah, man, I wasn't that good of a student, man. I gotta keep it real.
Yeah?
Yeah, I wasn't a good student. I was
awful my first year in college. It was terrible.
Yeah, it was tough being, you know, in that situation with your own, you know, apartment, you know, pretty much. And yeah. Man.
Yeah, first time out on your own.
Yeah.
18, 19-year-old kid
yeah.
in a different state.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm. Ladies, you're a basketball player.
Yeah, that recipe it's that you just
tough,
mentioned, man is yeah, it was
got to be tough. It's got to be tough. Yeah. So how long were you at that school?
3 years.
3 years? Yeah. And did you get your degree?
No.
No? Why not?
I wasn't a student.
Just cut out.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't a student in the literal, like I wasn't a good student. I didn't
right.
study. I didn't do my homework. I didn't, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't.
And you lasted 3 years?
Yeah.
I was put on academic probation the first year I was in college.
Well, after I was put on academic
yeah.
probation as well,
yeah.
but then I buckled down and sort of got it. Because in order to play hoop, you had to have a 2.5 or 2.0 something.
Okay.
Whatever
okay.
it was, I was maintaining that.
Right. So sports was kind of the
the
focus.
Yeah.
In getting that shit straight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did when you left school then?
Mm-hmm.
In what? Junior year?
Yes.
Was that when music was starting to take hold?
It was.
It's like, okay.
It was.
I'm gonna go be a musician.
That's probably a direct quote from my psychology at that time. That's what I did. I moved to New York and
yeah.
I was an intern for Sleeping Bag Records, but always with my mind on like finding a studio to record this demo. Like
uh-huh.
that was what I was doing basically.
Were you rapping in college?
Oh yeah.
Yeah? With
yeah.
other people too?
No, by myself.
Yeah.
I used to go to this guy George's room. And he had a keyboard that you could make beats on. He had a mic, so I was always in his room, man. I'll never forget this girl. She used to, 'cause he was older than me, so I was just
uh-huh.
this little kid in his room, and she used to just be like, "You serious? Like, is he really coming?" Like, you know what I mean?
This is going to be my next question.
Leave him
How
alone,
long did
man.
It take him to get pissed off at you?
He liked me, man. He was willing to let me, because he was into music and stuff,
yeah.
obviously. But his girl, and she was pretty too. I know he didn't like upsetting her, man. But he let me get my ideas and stuff out, man.
Well, that's cool, man.
Yeah, George
that's really
was
cool.
the guy, man. He was,
did he like see something in you?
He must have.
Yeah?
Yeah, because he was like, he had his own room,
uh-huh.
so he was like an older
oh,
guy.
Oh, he was one of those guys.
Yeah, he was older. He had his own room, his girl staying with him. He had a car and shit. You know what I'm saying? He had keyboards and mics and shit in his room. Now that I think about it, he was a boss, man. I don't know what that cat was doing. But he was cool to me, man.
Right on,
yeah.
right on. So you moved to New York. You start working for this record label. What was the record label called again?
Sleeping Bag Records.
Sleeping
man.
Bag Records.
EPMD.
Is that a hip-hop label?
Definitely. Well,
yeah?
They started off doing like freestyle and dance, like
okay.
Nocera and Nicole and all that. But Then they had EPMD, Steezo was on there, Just Ice, like straight up heavy hitters from back in that day.
Yeah. And so this was like, this was the plan then? Get in with a record label, see how things work? Is that what the point was?
Instinctively, I wasn't thinking of it that way. Yeah. I was just trying to get closer to the grooves, you know what I mean, and find somebody with a studio. Sure. I was a male. I did errands and delivered shit, you know, tapes and stuff to lawyers and brought contract. Like, that's all I did, and get coffee and shit for people.
Yeah. Then when does Diggable Planets start? How does that thing all come up?
That? I did a demo with a guy named Stacy Burkett. He worked at Sleeping Bag with me as well. He had a studio.
He just produced it?
He just let me use his equipment.
Yeah?
Yeah, he let me use his equipment. I always, like, made my own beats and stuff, you know? The guy would teach me the equipment. I would make my own beats. They would help me sort of, like, maybe mix it or something like that. And then I had a Diggable Planets demo. Then I got it to a guy.
Just you?
Yeah, me and this dude named Squid.
Okay.
He's from Seattle as well. And we got that to this dude Dennis Wheeler because of this lady I knew named Kat Jackson. And Dennis worked at Pendulum Records,
which that was the subsidiary to Elektra, right?
Elektra, right? Yep. And
you guys made like some sort of VHS tape that went along with it. You make like a video or something?
Yeah, we made a video in Philly.
Yeah.
When I was running with my boy DJ King Britt, the world famous King Britt, we shot a video around his crib, edited that joint, and it was like, it was like a documentary about how I had like fell from space and was like among the people now, you know what I'm saying? Like making music and stuff, you know, so check them out type of shit, you know what I mean? Like it was ridiculous, man.
Oh my God. Where does the obsession with space come in for you? Because there's a lot, there's a like I was listening to Les Majesty earlier today. I've had it on repeat a lot lately. And I was like, man, this guy is like these guys are like cosmic hip hop artists, or they're rap cosmonauts, because it's just like it conjures this vision in me of just space.
Yeah. I mean,
are you obsessed with space?
I don't think so. I think I'm comfortable with it. You know,
comfortable with space?
Yeah, because I think there must be some connection, some sensory atomic connection that me and a lot of other cats have had with space and music, you know, where you just feel comfortable dealing with it and using it and in it, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I like that.
Yeah. I do too.
Okay, so Mac, you make this VHS tape where you have fallen from the heavens and graced the planet Earth with your presence.
Yeah.
and you give this to Elektra.
Yeah.
And what happens?
We did the single first.
Okay.
The single gets released in 1992 in like December. It catches on. It was a white label. They used to do white labels back then. That was the promotional thing. So
okay,
a white label was like didn't have the artwork, just
nothing
had,
on yeah, it. Yeah, it just was your just, name.
You send it out to DJs to get a feel for it.
Right, right.
The white label did good. By the time we pressed it up, there was a lot of orders for it. It ended up, we shot a video. The video was rocking on like MTV and whatnot. And the single went gold. So 500,000 copies, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's so that like? How old are you at that point? 19? 20?
No, 20, 21 or something like that. Yeah.
21 years old. You've got a gold single.
Yeah.
You haven't even done the album yet.
No. We're working on
it. The fuck is going on in your head at that point? Like, are you kind of freaking out a little bit? You got a huge smile on your face right now.
But when you're young, like, you think everything is normal. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying it was lost on me, because it wasn't, but like...
Like, you're just trying to play it cool, like... Just rolling with it.
Yeah, and you're affecting a lot of your personality as well, you know? So a lot of stuff that you are in awe of, by the time you translate it through your insecurities or whatever, like, you're right. You're playing it cool, or you have something that you've decided this is going to disguise whatever it is you're truly feeling. But,
sure,
you know, I mean, I think I was still within reason. Me and my crew, we were just young and dazzled. But more than anything, we like rapping and making music. So that was, you could fall back on the
essence of that. That was the most important thing to you guys still. Yeah. It's a very grounded way to be, man.
I hope so. I mean,
yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't stay grounded when stuff like that happens. They either turn into a drug addict, or they turn into an asshole, or they turn into both.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens to a lot of people. You hear that kind of story all the time. So the music just kept you guys grounded?
Nah, I think for me it was the way I was not taught, but the way I was shown, you know, like,
sure,
my parents and my family, they always dealt in essential things, you know, not superficial things. And that's lucky to have that many people in different places and regions still all sort of like, you know, your family, man, people kind of underestimate how similar you guys all are and all feel.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I just been lucky to be born into a clan of people that saw humanity as where the richest of things are in life.
Mm-hmm. So you weren't concerning yourself with spending tons of money on, like, you know, cars and things of that nature. You weren't worried about that?
Nah, I wasn't. I didn't even
you
have
and I
a
are
car,
very man. Different people.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, everybody's different, you know.
Except now, when I daydream about having loads of money, I dream about having, like, a small, tiny little 2-seater electric car. That's like what I dream about now.
Those, they make some nice ones, though.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You can get leather in that.
Yeah.
Maybe even a DVD player.
Yeah. Whatever you want, if you got money.
That's right. So when do things start getting crazy, though? Because things really started to take off after that first album was done, right?
Yeah. But I mean, again, man, like,
it wasn't crazy for you? Like, you know, being flown all around the world and being able to see all these amazing places, what was the biggest show you ever played?
We opened up for James Brown in Brazil at, like, a soccer stadium or something. Yeah.
50,000?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah.
That's insane, man.
Yeah, it was wild. It was wild.
Do you ever take a step back and think about that kind of stuff?
I think I'm always floating back thinking about that, you know? Yeah. Like, I never just sit back and sort of, man, you know, like, I'm, but things come up
sitting
and
back,
you remember
smelling your
them
own
and,
junk.
Yeah. You know? I don't know.
Yeah. See, once again, we're very different people.
Yeah.
I'd spend the rest of my days just sitting back going, yeah, I did that.
Everybody's got to do what they feel like doing, you know?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, sure. But it must have been fun at the time, right? Or were you still at the level where, like, you're playing a huge show like that and you're just in the zone the whole time?
I've always been like, if I have a show next week, I'm always like, man, nobody's gonna come. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I feel all the time. And then, like, I'm surprised a little. Not surprised, but, like, I never take for granted that someone's going to want to be there to check you out. Like, so there's anxieties that come with that. But,
Yeah. It must have been a fun ride, though.
Nah, the fun is that, like, unimaginable. kicking it, you know?
Yeah. We were talking in the kitchen a little bit before we started recording about the tour.
Yeah.
Touring and stuff, and it sounds like you still really enjoy that.
I do.
Yeah. I do. About to go on a world tour right now.
Nah, just Europe.
Just Europe, that's right.
Just Europe.
And you're looking forward to it?
Very.
Yeah.
Very much.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm stoked for you.
Thank you, man.
Yeah,
appreciate that.
So, fast forward a couple years.
Yeah,
you've done this. You've talked about this at length, so we don't have to stick on it. But like Diggable Planets, Blow Outcome comes out.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite albums, and doesn't do all that great for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Came out to critical acclaim,
but
not many people bought it.
Yeah.
What's that feel like? Was that something you guys were really concerning yourselves with at that point? I mean, at this point, you guys are a business, somewhat.
I mean, yeah, but we didn't. We certainly hadn't bought into that. You know what I'm saying? Nah, not at all. Not at all. And like, when you're young, the invincibleness that you feel doesn't only go when you're quote unquote having success. Like you feel like that. When you having quote unquote failures too, like we just didn't give a fuck. Like it's like to the people that we were trying to communicate our direction to, we understood that it had reached that, so we were feeling fine about all of that. You know? Yeah, and even the commercial sort of drop off, I felt bad because I liked the people that I worked with at the label. You know, Dennis and Ruben and all the people in the promotions and Stanley that worked at radio, like. I knew what their bottom line was, and I felt bad that they weren't going to be able to reach it with this piece, but I believed in it, and I didn't want like, okay, you guys sold one thing for the first album. Now you're going to try to run it back through that and get that same thing going. I didn't really respect that. I'm not going to say it's lazy, but they had the quality of music to go and make the most of the second album too. That they didn't, I understand. I'm not beefing with them or nothing, but I wasn't tripping. Yeah. I wasn't mad that it didn't sell that many.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a fantastic album.
It actually lasted longer in the mind of music people much more than the first album did. You know, like it has a life of its own that's different than a big seller.
Sure. Yeah. Well, there's a lot more political overtones to it than the first one.
I think it was less... To me, politics, because I don't know nothing about them, if anything is associated with it musically to a person that's not trying to do it, then it has to do with accessibility.
Sure.
The first one being a little bit more accessible. Yeah, there was like imagery and stuff like that. But again, it was a communication with a group of people that if you liked it as a byproduct of that communication, it was cool. But it wasn't really for anyone else specifically as it was to... We just didn't want to be like, oh, this group that, you know, is kind of like about this and that, about things that we weren't about.
Right,
so it was letting them know where we was coming from. So politics in the sense, more about maybe politics of aesthetics, like the look of things we wanted to bring back to a certain essence, but.
Maybe I should have used the term social.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of political.
Yeah.
But
social, political. We would be in social, politically. Yeah, man. It was a dissertation on the effect, you understand? Yeah.
So basically you guys broke up. What year was that? That things remember. Were called quits.
I don't remember. It was a couple years after Blowout Calm, so I guess 2007 or something like that.
Okay.
That would be the latest it would have been. Yeah.
And it sounds like it was pretty, it was like a mutual split.
Yeah, it really. Everybody wasn't volatile. No, it wasn't volatile.
Everybody's ready to move on.
Yeah.
But then you kind of disappeared a little bit.
From
music.
From releasing music, yeah.
Yeah. You didn't go back up into the ether.
Nah, I was still physically. Making music. Nah, I was still making a lot of music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But why not release anything during that time?
Man, it was a little different back then. Like, you couldn't just... I wasn't a big enough name to go and snag another deal, really. Because, like, a deal back then was different than it is now. Like, there were just labels, you know, that there was a lot more you had to do to kind of get a deal. It wasn't like you could just get off a label and get on another one.
Even 07, though? I mean, wasn't...
Not for me.
Okay.
I couldn't do that.
Okay.
I couldn't do that. I mean, if you were a bigger star in the rap game, you could, for sure. But not me. Like, I was part of a group. Me, personally, like, people knew that I produced it and stuff like that, but only the diehards, really. It wasn't, like, common knowledge. I didn't have hits. I was coming off of a, you know what I'm saying, something that wasn't a commercial success. So I didn't have options. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No way. Yeah. No way. But I wasn't tripping about that. I mean, I tried to get on, but I really didn't even try because I knew, you know. And when I was ready to try too, I did. So, you know.
Yeah. And so that's when Shabazz Palaces was.
Yeah, was I had born. A couple of things in between, but yeah, Shabazz came after all of that stuff when I moved back to Seattle and was living here.
What brought you back? What brought you back here?
Family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got a kid?
I do.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
How old?
I have three kids, man. 24 and 20. Two kids that are 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I can't wait.
Till they're 20?
Yeah.
There'll be some days in between that you could have waited for, but yeah.
I'm sure there will be. Yeah.
No, but it's definitely all good, for sure.
Yeah. Did they live here in Seattle too?
Yeah.
Right on, man.
Oh, well, not now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
At different points in their life, they have only one. Yeah. My daughter Dee's from Seattle, but even she lived in Oakland for some time. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So, when you guys released your first record, and it came out, and a lot of people were talking about it, all good things from what I've read.
Mostly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, did that take you as a... Was that a surprise to you? That people liked it? I mean, because it's out there.
Yeah.
Shabazz is out there.
Yeah. It was a surprise. I mean, you believe always in what you've done. You know, hopefully, you know. But you never know, man, how it's going to be taken. So any kind of recognition for it, and if it's positive, it's good, it's a surprise. You know, I'm never going into a situation expecting favor. So,
well, you said earlier you're the type of guy that's always worried about if anybody's even going to show up at the show.
Yeah.
So you're setting your sights low, right?
No. I feel like my sights are always even higher than we've even achieved, you know, because...
Well, maybe not sights, but expectation.
Yeah, because you know, it could not do anything. You know that. Like, because you yourself have heard and are fans of things that you and a couple other people know about, but you know this is the best shit that's came out in the last 5 years, you know what I mean? But don't nobody know about this guy or this group, so... Being good, that don't really have nothing to do with being successful in the commercial music business. So, yeah, you never know. You always have that anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And being a success in the music industry, is that a source of anxiety for you?
Yeah, but it's just like going on stage as a kid or playing basketball. Like, I seek out that anxious situation, you know? That's when I feel the most comfortable creating, is when there's some, what people call pressure on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. And are you working on new stuff now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Constantly?
Yes.
With this guy?
Yes. Me and Blood, we get together as often as, I won't say we can because we can do it all the time, but we get together when it's time, you know, when it's time for us to join up and really finish things, you know, like... We communicate like that. We communicate to seal the deal, you know, and commit to it sonically and to the composition, you know, and that's a big thing to do. So it's good to really work with the bro because we have a good understanding. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've been working together for so many years now.
But I can't really say that we've worked better than, I don't think, like, I can't say that it's grown to some comfort. Like, it's always been comfortable as it is now for uh-huh. me. Yeah. So, it was even luckier than you can imagine for me to yeah. find them. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of unheard of.
It is. But he does it for a lot of people, though. That's kind of a talent, too, that he has of being able to, like, you know, talk to some people, look at them, then, of course, listen to them, hear what their wishes are for their sonics, and then, like, get them to that. But at the same time, giving them what it might need to be different in a way that's beneficial to them as well, and get them to understand it, want to hear it, hear the idea, and then being able to execute it and make them feel like, yeah, that is good. Like, that's different.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's great, man. Yeah. That's great. Well, it really shows on your latest album, Lay's Majesty, which is available now. When did this come out? Just last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's available at Sub Pop and also most likely on your website at ShabazzPalaces.com.
And if you see me around town, I usually have a few on me as well.
You can pay in cash.
And if you pull on my shirt, it'll...
it'll rip off.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, this has been a complete honor, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to come up here and chat with me.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Did you enjoy yourself?
I did. It was good.
Good.
It's good to go down some of the places that we went. I hadn't thought about them for a while. I appreciate that.
Good, man. I love it. I love it. All right. Thanks, Ish.
Thank you.
All right. You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate and review the show. That really helps out in the long run, helps us get up on the charts in iTunes, which means a lot. It means a lot to us. I don't know if it means a lot to you guys. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps, or just visit our website, air-raid.net, to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. And you can also access the Archives tab take a listen to all 241 episodes right there at the website. Keep in touch with us by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/the Air Raid Podcast or follow us on Twitter at Air Raid Net. We're right there. Let's see. Or email me directly, Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge. Take the pledge, people. Pledge to tell someone about the show. Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother, your father, your cousins, and maybe just sign them up. Sign them up, subscribe them to the show without them knowing. They would probably appreciate it, man. This show is amazing, right? Yeah, that's right. All right, we're going to close the episode with the song Dawn in Luxor. Dawn in Luxor off of Lay's Majesty by Shabazz Palaces. And this is a fantastic, fantastic song. But before we do that, here's your inspirational quote of the week, as said by a 3.5-year-old.
Do or do not. There is no try.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. We hope you have a great week. Gilded barrels, they move around strapped up with our chains in our wings, with our wings. From out the wall, it's wall. From Luxor to heaven's endless sprawl. See the waves, not your
just stay listening, purple clips. You're with me, amazing shit. The shit they came from close, now they hang in a collection. You stay with this image, being witness. Compassion position in its simplest and most quickest decision. Now that's the comfort of the uninvented, but that project and exalt, we keep you in it till it's finished. Yeah.
Tearing it off if you've got a jacket over the top of it, though.
Exactly. You know? Exactly, man. Why would he even do something like that, man? Oh, my God. Come on, man. It was... Come on, man. I never saw that nowhere, nothing, but I... Maybe I must have seen it somewhere, but...
Eddie Murphy just rocked a leather coat with a gold chain.
No, but the tearing off of the thing...
You saw some Chippendale shit.
Wait a minute! Chippendales! My whole shit's based on the Chippendales!